J.P. Karliak is a talented voice actor who is currently voicing Morph on X-Men 97. And this is Sci-Fi Talk, the podcast on how sci-fi, with its cautionary and hopeful tales, and fantasy, which enhances our capacity to dream, and horror, a good scare, or perhaps looking into our dark sides, and comics, with heroes that guide us to be better. All this helps to explore our humanity. JP also voiced iconic characters, including DC's Joker, and done a wide variety of work as well. You got the part, you step into the booth. Before you do that, is there any kind of preparation on maybe getting into the headspace of the character a little bit?
A little bit. I mean, you know, the big thing is reading the script. I think, especially for a show like X-Men, or, you know, when I used to do Boss Baby and there were just massive chunks of copy with $10 words, having read that, really going through it and making sure that I have an awareness of what's happening, what's going on, what's required in each scene, that's key. That's key.
There's more with J.P. Karliak talking X-Men 97 in a moment. You're playing Morph in X-Men, and you've also voiced the Joker. These are characters that people know, and they're iconic. Do you try to put past performances, or especially in the case of the Joker, out of your mind and just kind of go in there and say, you look at the script and you just interpret without even thinking of a certain voice that somebody else has done, saying, hey, this is what I'm going to do right now?
Sure. I mean, I certainly had more freedom to do that if I wanted to with this Joker, just because he's an Elseworlds Joker. He's from a different universe. He's not one we've seen before or has been played by anybody previously. So I could have really gone in a totally different direction. And in some ways I did. But I think, as with any legacy character that I've played before, so much of it is balancing how close the producer wants you to hew to the original and also your own interpretation. So I think with this, understanding that although I was doing something completely new, he still had to be recognizable as a Joker, a version of the Joker. So I think in that sense, I was pulling, especially when it came to the laugh, you know, a little bit of Heath Ledger, a little bit of Cesar Romero, a little bit of Mark Hamill, you know, just having fun with that. My interpretation of this Joker was really just leaning more into my own speaking voice as opposed to doing a character so much.
For Morph, something we talked in the past about is the fact that because he can change into different people, through those people, he can kind of comment on it. I know you don't do those voices, right, but it must be fun for the character to maybe, when you come out of it and you're still teasing the other character as well, where it really doesn't stop. So talk about that aspect of his personality.
Yeah, I mean, that, and you kind of hit on it a little bit. That's such a part of it that Morph is a collaborative character. He's played by multiple people for whenever he changes into somebody else. But I still have to be very cognizant of what they're doing, what the mindset is while he's inhabiting those characters. And then when he comes back out, pick up from there. So there is a degree of it kind of has a hot potato kind of feel, you know, passing back and forth and trying to keep it all up in the air. But it is so much fun to see what my fellow castmates have done with their interpretation of Morph when Morph is playing them.
Do you hear that on playback, or you just don't hear it at all while you're recording?
I don't hear it at all. So I kind of have to make it up in my head. And the nice thing is that I'm making it up and sort of getting a sense of what they might do. Now that I've seen a season of several episodes of the show, I have an even better idea of what they might do as opposed to before I even knew who was playing these roles. We also have a great voice director who is sort of figuring out, like, okay, this is what JP bookended this performance with in using his lines. So now she knows where another character or another actor who's doing Morph in their character voice, you know, needs to pick up and where they need to leave off to make it a seamless transition.
With a voice director, how important are they to your work? Do they like kind of steer the ship for you a little bit?
An animated TV show has multiple directors. There's the voice director who does all of the voice directing, obviously, and really guides the cast. But then there's also the director. There might be two directors behind her who might include the writer and who is leading sort of the storyline and really and the written element of it. And then there's the director who's leading the animation element of it, doing the storyboards, the sketches, and eventually, you know, leading what the animation will look like and turn out to be. It's really essential that they're all working in sync to make that product feel like a cohesive whole.
So you record it, and then sometimes it might even take years later until the finished product comes out. What was your reaction the first time you saw Morph? Your voice, but obviously a different image.
I think the big reaction, obviously I saw some promotional artwork and stuff that went up before, but it wasn't really until the premiere that I saw him in action. And also that he was included in the title sequence, which was so cool. I had no idea that was happening. I mean, it meant a lot. It meant a lot. To be a part of such a big project, to be a part of a property that I'm a fan of, to see this queer superhero being highlighted in such a big way. All of that, there was all of those emotions going on at once. It was really awesome.
You formed a company called QueerVox. Tell us a little bit about that. I'm really curious about that.
Yeah. So QueerVox is a nonprofit I started 3 years ago. And it came out of conversations I was having with casting directors, where we were celebrating that there were more queer characters in animation and video games, but that they weren't necessarily authentically cast with queer actors. So, you know, and the common refrain was, well, I don't know where they are. I don't know how to find them. And I'm like, well, I know they exist. There are certainly queer actors out there. So it started as a training class and then became an online community, a online talent directory, and also industry-facing advocacy that we do, so that the studios know what should be in a character breakdown for an audition, so that somebody can recognize, like, oh, they're looking for me. This is they are using the right language to describe my identity, so I should audition for this. So it's a multi-pronged approach that really pushes for not only authentic casting when those roles do come up, but also to ask the industry to consider queer actors for other roles as well, so that they can build sustainable careers, because there just aren't enough queer roles for somebody to make a living portraying.
Yeah, I know Matt Bomer, who's openly queer. He voiced Superman, and
did
a great job at it too, by the way. So let's take a break. We'll have more on X-Men 97 and much more on Sci-Fi Talk. How many members do you have right now that are involved with that?
Let's see. So we have it kind of depends on where we get the metric from. So in our online Discord community, we have about 700 people, but in our online talent directory that people can search for demos and cast people, that's closer to 1,000.
Wow, that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And just 3 years, that's not bad. That's pretty good. We talked about this before, and we have an election coming up in the fall, a big one. Mm-hmm. And you also are part of Nerds Vote. I'm a self-proclaimed nerd for a long time, and I do vote. So, tell us a little bit about that.
Nerds Vote was the brainchild of my friend and voiceover pal, Courtney Taylor, who is known for being in Fallout and Mass Effect and a lot of great video games. And Courtney was bemoaning that she was so busy with going to conventions and doing signings and meeting people. She was like, how can I use my platform to reach more people and get them to vote? And then she was like, well, wait a minute, I'm at conventions. It makes total sense for me to bring voter registration opportunities there. And that's what we did. But then the pandemic hit and we shifted to more of a digital outreach where we enlisted our fellow quote unquote notable nerds to get them to encourage their fan bases to get out and vote. And it's a nonpartisan organization. Courtney and I are fairly partisan in our own lives, but for us, it's more important for this organization that it's less about getting somebody to vote for a particular candidate or a particular party, but just encouraging people, especially the nerds, whether they be cosplayers, gamers, congoers, whatever, comic book fans, to just encourage them to be as involved in their democracy as they are in the wonderful, fantastical worlds that they enjoy. So, that's what we've been up to. And right now, we're doing a campaign for Free Comic Book Day, where we're going to be partnering with 50 comic book stores around the country and sending them stickers that have QR codes on them that the store will give out to everybody that comes in. And that QR code will take them right to a voter registration page. So, yeah.
That's fantastic. That's great. You know, I've been playing Star Trek Resurgence, which has been cool. And I saw that you played the Vulcan engineer, Commander Chovak. How important was it to capture kind of like the Vulcan essence of the character and to keep it within those parameters, but still show concern for the crew, for example, and his team?
Yeah, I think, for me, it was less about focusing on, quote unquote, doing Spock, or trying to emulate some particular Vulcanism, and really more about, I recognized this guy as somebody who is a taskmaster, who's persnickety about the detail of his job, who has a very important job that is key to the functioning of the ship and takes it very seriously. But within that, he is also compassionate. He just doesn't have a lot of time for frivolity or showing too much emotion. He just wants to get things done, in knowing that by keeping things running, he is actually protecting everybody on this ship. So it was really just focusing on that and trusting that the director would tell me if I was going too far afield away from what a Vulcan should sound like. And I think we kind of got it. Yeah.
Oh, you nailed it. I mean, he was very Vulcan to me, and I've been a fan a long time, and I would notice Vulcans wouldn't talk like that. I would say things like that when I would see somebody who wasn't quite up to snuff. Rizia Bajos, who voiced the main character. Interesting race, too, by the way. But I was happy to hear that she was Cuban, because I'm Cuban. And she did such a great job, playing that character. And I know you've worked with her before in the past, too.
Yeah, Kritzia was a director on a project that I worked on called Wildflowers, which is a really adorable video game about a girl who moves to I think it's sort of like a New England island. I think that's where it's located. But she moves to this island and just gets along with townspeople. And oops, there's also witches in the town. And that's sort of like the whole thrust of it. It's very sweet. It's so cute. And she's a marvel. Kritzia is a marvelous director.
Yeah, I guess the days of recording together are gone, especially for video games, and the pandemic certainly changed a lot of that too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, every once in a while, there's an opportunity that comes along, and those are really special when we get to be in person. And that's still usually animation, not video games. But yeah, I will say it's kind of a testament to those voice directors who are really good, that even in spite of just being alone in your booth, they create a space and a creativity and positivity.
I have to credit Michael Piotr, who did a fantastic Mr. Spock in Resurgence. I mean, he captured the nuances of that voice, and to hear it in new dialogue coming out of Mr. Spock was kind of emotional for me, because I had interviewed Leonard, and Spock was always a hero of mine. So it was cool to see that. And yeah, he did a great, great job. It was a very fun game to play.
Cool.
Yeah, I played it twice. It was really neat. It was a lot of fun to do that. What's coming up for you next, if you can talk about it?
There's an animated series that I'm a part of that comes out later this spring, but I haven't been announced as a part of it yet. So stay tuned. That's coming.
Okay. Well, thanks again for being on the podcast. And
it's a pleasure.
Customizable podcast playlists, exclusive videos, special episodes like the Mix 100 podcasts selected by listener downloads. All this and more at Sci-Fi Talk Plus. And now with 1,000 episodes, uncut, and a special offer for free lifetime access now available until May 1st. Click on the link in the show notes. No anonymous signups are allowed.
Thanks, Bella. This is Tony Tolato. Thanks so much for listening.